From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Benicia.
Sunset District.
I live in Lakeside.
The Western Addition.
Coming up, we continue our series on life after prison by considering one of the biggest obstacles to making it on the outside, finding a job.
Because they've committed a crime, especially if it's a violent crime, they're going to find it extremely difficult to get any kind of gainful employment.
Then we'll hear from a man who spent time at San Quentin. Now he's helping other formerly incarcerated people return to their community.
So they don't know you've changed. They might not accept you until they've been around you a while, or they might not ever accept you again.
And we'll hear another memory of Candlestick Park, about the badge of honor for fans who braved long, cold baseball games. The quad a candlestick.
The first night they gave the quad a candlestick out, everyone's screaming, "Where's my quad?"
We've got your quad right here on Cross Currents. San Francisco's latest ban the box law took effect today. It means people who have been incarcerated cannot be asked about their criminal histories by most publicly funded housing providers or private employers in the city. One in four U.S. citizens has a criminal record, and it can be an impediment to finding a job. As part of our series on reentering society from prison, we're going to hear now from two formerly incarcerated men who are looking for work.
I got out November 1st, 2012.
Mm-hmm. I got out February 21st, 2013.
That's William Bennett and John Porter. To protect their identities, we're not using their real names. Both spent most of their adult lives in prison. Getting out means having to learn things most of us spend decades practicing, things like using the internet or using proper punctuation on a job application. Today, KALW's Louisa Beck reports on the challenges Bennett and Porter face in finding a job.
At the age of 51, William Bennett was one of the oldest people in California who could claim this.
My whole life, never had a job.
But in June 2013, 8 months after leaving prison, that was about to change.
Either Monday or Tuesday, I'll be working on the freeways. 580 or 880, picking up trash. First job ever.
He enrolled in the Golden State Works Initiative, which provides job training and placement services to parolees in Oakland. On the last day of his training, William and I met for breakfast.
Today is June 14th, my graduation day. We're sitting here in the Oakland City Civic Plaza.
What is the most challenging part of re-entering?
Employment. Finding employment, being able to get paid enough to survive. Will this job allow me to continue working and be able to pay my rent? Or will I find a job that will lay me off?
William introduced me to many parolees who had similar questions and fears. People like John Porter.
I could find jobs all day long at $10 an hour. You know, $10, $12 an hour, $14 an hour, easy. You know, but to actually find a good job that's going to pay some money, that's been the roughest part.
John and I met in April at the Berkeley Rose Garden. Like William, he'd taken part in the GSW job training program, but he was having trouble finding work that paid a living wage.
If it's not anywhere between 19 to 25, you know, it's really hard to live because you're just going to be working to pay your rent.
On average, serving time reduces annual earnings by 40%.
One barrier is having a criminal record, and another barrier is just having many years of incarceration where you're out of the job market.
Catherine Katcher is executive director of Root and Rebound, a reentry advocacy center in Berkeley.
Even if people are involved in training programs inside of prison or in educational programs inside of prison, when they get out, there's a huge stigma against them. And because they've committed a crime, especially if it's a violent crime, they're going to find it extremely difficult to get any kind of gainful employment.
Some local governments have made it illegal for city contractors to ask an applicant about their criminal record on an interview form. But current state and federal law allows potential employers to reject formerly incarcerated people. Katcher says it can happen at any point.
In the application review, in interviews, in hiring, in promotions, and in termination decisions. Technically, they are supposed to do a kind of nexus test where they look at how recent that conviction is, the relationship of that kind of conviction to the job. But very few employers actually do that work.
John told me he'd recently been turned down from his old job as a school bus mechanic because of the felony on his record. He was getting frustrated.
I've been applying at AC Transit, the Port of Oakland, Muni, the City of San Francisco, the City of Oakland. You know, I've been applying everywhere, you know, trying to get a decent job.
While waiting to hear back, John was working several part-time jobs as a mover, an installer, a welder, and a part-time ceramics instructor. He'd learned how to make pottery in a prison arts program. In May, we met up at Creations in Clay, a ceramic studio in Oakland.
So these ones here, those up there is mine, the ones on that shelf.
He showed me bright, tall vases with blue, orange, and mother-of-pearl glazes that were displayed in the studio's small gallery. This is one place where he's not judged for his past, but admired for his skill as a teacher and an artist. But he's not paid enough money to live on.
Those I made in prison.
Like John, William worked part-time jobs while looking for permanent work.
My one job, I was working two and three jobs, you know, minimum wage. One was $9, another was $10, another was minimum wage. Now I don't have to work.
Some days, he drove a truck from 3 p.m. to 5 a.m. On other days, he transported cars for a car rental company, washed uniforms and rugs for an industrial cleaner, and worked as a security guard at nightclubs. But he kept networking, talking with contacts, and handing out business cards. And one day, he told his story at a fundraising event and impressed the chief executive director of Westside Community Services, a mental health agency in San Francisco. He got hired and started as a receptionist.
It's a big office. It has a coffee machine, lots of nice chairs, pillows, pictures of giraffes.
The job turned out to have surprising challenges. In prison, William had no access to the internet. So things like searching for online information, managing passwords, and using smartphones were completely new to him.
This is stressful, not knowing how to work this phone. It don't want to go, sending a message.
Studies show that many formerly incarcerated people have significant educational and employment deficits. Roughly half lack a high school degree, and many depended on illegal income prior to incarceration. When they get out, they have a lot of catching up to do. Eventually, William transitioned into a role as a community liaison. Part of his new role includes reaching out to local parents and youth. We're at Wallenberg Traditional High School in San Francisco. William is here to speak to a group of students about his experiences growing up and in prison. Around 20 students and their teacher have gathered in the school library for their last men's group meeting of the year.
These kids are what, about 16, 17? Yeah, so this is when I went to prison. So it's like, this is when my life stopped.
The room becomes quiet as William begins his speech.
The reason why we're here today is because we're giving back to society. I was one of the first juveniles in the state of California to be tried as an adult. I was 17 years old.
William has found a job that lets him pay his bills and tell a story. But about half of people who have been incarcerated don't find jobs the first year out. And that's the case for John. He told me he decided to stop telling potential employers about his criminal history. Now, he says, he's close to landing a job as a full-time driver. Not what he wants to do, but better than nothing. Yet, he's anxious a background check could end his employment at any time. For Cross Currents, I'm Louisa Beck.
Next Wednesday, we'll continue our series on reentry by seeing what it's like to get to know your child for the first time when she's an adult.
I was able to develop a relationship as her being a woman now. She's not a kid no more. She's a grown person.
Find all the stories in this series at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. Alton McSween faced some of the same issues as William Bennett and John Porter when he was released from San Quentin last year. In fact, he knows both men. They all lived in the same transitional housing program in Berkeley after leaving prison. McSween found employment after his release, mentoring other formerly incarcerated people through the California Reentry Institute. McSween goes by the name Coach, a throwback to his days coaching high school track. That was his job back in 1992 when he got his first two convictions for burglary. In 2001, he was arrested for petty theft and got 25 years to life under the state's three strikes law. Last year, McSween was among the first group of offenders to be released from prison under California's Prop 36, which counts only so-called serious crimes as a third strike. Those are things like assault, murder, and rape. I spoke with McSween and asked him what he remembered about that first day he left San Quentin.
People getting released from Prop 36 was a new thing for all the prisons, and you didn't know when you were leaving. So it was, you know, the COs around the yard and other guys would go, "When are you leaving?" I said, "I have no idea." But even though I was nervous, I was ready. But no matter how ready you are, you're not normal if you're not nervous still. Everything was new to me. I left San Quentin and got on a bus in Richmond, and they took me to the Richmond BART station, and I felt like I was on Mars. I had no idea how to buy a ticket, how to get on the train, where to get off. And luckily, I asked some people, and they told me, but it was just overwhelming. I remember sitting in the BART station for about 20 minutes just looking at stuff before I finally asked someone, "Hey, how do I get a ticket, and how do I get here?"
So you were alone?
I was alone, yeah. But
well, where did you go? I mean, you had to set up your
basics. I didn't
want
to go home because I knew I needed to keep the foundation that I had built in that structure that I gained at San Quentin under me. So I went to Options Recovery Services in Berkeley. That's been an absolute blessing since I've been there. 3 months after I got there, they made me a house manager. And it just welcomed me with open arms, and I'm so thankful for everything that program has offered me. I graduated from Options last June, and I still give back. I go in there and mop floors every day and, you know, do my job as a house manager.
And that program brings together a lot of ex-offenders, many of whom are addicts or were addicts, and then many of whom also have had life sentences in prison but have then been released on parole. So it's a combination. I mean, does that make it more difficult, do you think, to be in an environment that's mixed like that and then also surrounded by people who have been in prison, or does that make it easier because of the support?
I think it's easier because of support. I'll tell you a perfect example. The house that I run a transitional house. At a point in time, there's 14 of us in the house. I'm not on parole being a three striker. 8 of the 14 of us, we were all at San Quentin together. We've known each other for years. The other 6 gentlemen came from different prisons who had done a lot of programming, and our house was just excellent. You know, there's never a problem, you know? I mean, you have little problems, nothing major. Now we get more of the guys in early recovery, and you get the guys relapsing, you get the little theft problems and whatnot. It can be frustrating because lifers don't go back to prison. They've been running their own program for years, and they're solid in their recovery. They've been clean and sober for years. And most all people in prison, I think it's 92% or something, it's either anger or drugs that got them there. And, you know, they processed that and the program and it's out of their system. They just want to live their life and, you know, move on.
Yeah, lifers almost never recidivate, but what nearly 2/3 of other people who've been in prison do. So yeah. How easy is it to do that? I mean, you have not recidivated and you're making a life for yourself after being in prison for quite a while. A lot of people aren't able to do that. Why?
I think a lot of it's programming. And the other part is I've just been blessed with so many people that have supported me. You know, when you know people care about you, it really makes a big difference. A lot of people in prison, you feel like your society's throwaways. People forget about you. A lot of people have no families to go to. Perhaps they burnt too many bridges, or you were locked up for so long. You lost a lot of people, family members through death. I lost my mom when I was locked up, and that was hard. That was really difficult for me.
That is Alton Coach McSween. He is an ex-offender who works with the California Reentry Institute. I see at least 3 significant things to deal with as you're leaving prison that you're going to need to get connected with somehow. One is housing. One is employment of some sort. And the other really is what you've been talking about, is the support system. And that can be a family. And if you've been in prison for quite a long time, then how difficult is it to reconnect and reestablish relationships with family members? How did you find
something
that?
We do is we don't force it. You know, we a lot of times we have been, you know, through the, you know, our addiction, whether it was drugs or just criminal thinking, and our families and friends got tired of us, you know, it's hearing, I'm sorry. So we try and teach that. And with CRI, California Reentry Institute, we have four main beliefs we have in there. And one is getting out of prison before you get out. And the second one is having a safe place to go when you get out. Number three is getting a job. And our ABCs of job is any job, a better job, and a career perhaps. And the fourth thing is community. And that's twofold. No matter how much work you've done and how much you've changed since you've been in prison, the people in your community don't know that. Because when you parole, you have to parole back to the community where the county in which you committed your crime. So they don't know you've changed. They might not accept you until they've been around you a while, or they might not ever accept you again. And you got to be able to deal with that. Like you can't come out thinking, man, I did all this work and these people still don't like me. Let it go. Move on. Just keep doing what you're going to do. You know, you can't change their thinking.
Could you tell me about some of the work that you do with the California Reentry Institute with offenders who are still serving their sentences?
You spend every Saturday in the program. And we think that really prepares you for everything. You get some guys, perhaps, that were locked up as juveniles, and they get out. They've never had a bank account. You know, how to use a credit card. They've never had and computers, guys that got locked up. And one of my good friends that was there, we were talking about computers one day. When he got into the prison at a young age, they just were coming out with the more sophisticated Casio calculators. So it's a lot of things that you got to take into consideration when you know.
Yeah, there's a big leap from the Casio calculator up to the smartphone.
And I thought I was really prepared. I'd done a lot of work, and I knew I couldn't wait to get out and do the things I wanted to do. What was hanging over my head was I didn't know if I'd ever get out, because if it wasn't for Prop 36, I'd still be there. So my thinking, you know, some days I think, is this going to be worth it? I'm doing all this work. And then I got to the point I get out of that thinking and say, well, I'm going to be the best person I can be in the San Quentin community.
So do you feel now, working as you do, speaking as you do, but not that far away from prison in the past, do you think that there's a chance that you could go back, or that you could fall back into addiction? Are you worried about recidivating in any way?
No, but what I do, I stay strong in my program. I know I go to NA or AA meeting every day. I work with my sponsors for both NA and AA every day. I talk to them, and I work with some sponsees who they don't understand it when I tell them, but maybe one day they'll get it. I said, I get more from you guys than you guys get from me, trust me. And that, you know, and all the people that have supported me so much, I don't know that ever want to let them down, but I'd let myself down by letting them down. I can't nearly write all the letters I want to the guys at San Quentin, so I keep a stack of little cards. They're like 3x5 cards. I can write them something and send them some pictures and let them know that I'm thinking about them and doing all I can to represent them. A lot of people will tell me, we really liked hearing what you say and what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And I say, that's really nice. But you know what? There's so many guys at San Quentin that need to get out, because they can do the same thing I'm doing, some of them better. You know, we have a world of talent in prison right now that's just rotting away. And I think society, we got to take a real hard look at that and say, hey, something's wrong. Our system's broken, you know. Our system is really broken, and we need to change. I know it's almost like I'm on the law enforcement side, but I think if you're, whatever you're sentenced to in prison, there should be a accompanying program you have to attend. If the reason you're in prison is because of drugs, well, it's mandatory you take NA and AA as part of your sentence. If anger got you into prison, well, you take some anger management, you know? And I think that should be part of your sentence. And you know, if not, you're just not going to learn, because there's too many guys just languishing in prison that go out to the yard and play dominoes and play basketball. And yeah, that does your time eats away like that, but you're going to be the same person when you get out.
That's Alton Coach McSween. He's a program coordinator with the California Reentry Institute. It's an organization that supports people who are getting released from prison. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. This week, we've been talking about an end of an era. As San Francisco bids farewell to Candlestick Park, we're talking with people about their memories of this iconic and chilly San Francisco landmark.
Medic, I can't feel my legs.
Hey, easy, kid, easy.
Cold beer.
To those valiant few who endure an extra inning night game, this year, once again, the Giants present the Quad Candlestick.
That's a commercial from 1985, advertising the Quad Candlestick. It was a souvenir pin that the Giants gave to fans when night games went into extra innings. It said Veni, Vidi, Vixi on it. I came, I saw, I survived. Today we hear from seasoned Giants fan Fernando Aguilar, who remembers the origins of the Quad Candlestick.
Well, that started in 83, and it was kind of brilliant, you know, because it was such a cold place. I remember the first night they gave the quad a candlestick out. Okay, it's extra inning games. Everyone's screaming, where's my quad? And there were so many people that wanted to get a hold of these things. The ushers just threw them out. There was, you know, just got handfuls of this bucket and just started throwing them at people. People were just scrambling around and fighting for them. It was like a bunch of foul balls, you know, being thrown at the same time. Then after a while, you'd see people kind of trading and maybe buying, and you see hats full of, covered with Quad candlesticks. And even now, you see them at AT&T Park. You see these old-timers with maybe 20 or 30 of these things, and that was pretty awesome. I think I only got like 6 or 7. I think they symbolize perseverance, uniqueness to San Francisco and the Giants, and another era, and another type of fan that used to go to Candlestick. You know, kids would take the bus or they would walk. They'd somehow get there. And kids in the old days, they used to play in the streets and stuff. It wasn't a big deal. You don't see that much anymore. It symbolizes to me kind of like my youth and kind of a badge of honor. I was never in the military. But this is a kind of a small kind of medal I got anyway. Veni, Vidi, Vixi. I came, I saw, I survived, I think is what it means. And that's what we did at Candlestick, an extra inning night game, man. We survived because we froze our tootsies off. We drank a lot to stay warm. Totally medicinal, you know.
That's Fernando Aguilar. We'd like to hear your memories of Candlestick Park, too. Share yours at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And you may hear yourself on the air. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Lisa Carmack, Audrey Dilling, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Suki Lewis, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ted Muldoon, Ryan Miller, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Liza Veal, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Leela Day. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, and because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. It's not every day that a local band credits the writings of F. Scott Fitzgerald as inspiration, but that's the case with Matt Jaffe and the Distractions, who you're hearing now. You can hear them this Sunday also as part of the 29th annual Concerts in the Plaza series in Mill Valley. It's a free show, starting about 2 p.m. Lawn chairs and dancing shoes are encouraged. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.